I can make a woke world, brainwashing children, it's splendid.
Tell me, princess, your pronouns, and just when did you decide?
A whole woke world.
What?
What?
It's not even on key.
I don't care. I don't know this song. I know the first part.
Okay, well, then
don't
sing,
you dare
do it
be
again.
A male.
I can show you the world. Gay and tranny and splendid.
Wow. That was really
Will,
good.
Everyone else came up with their line. You were supposed to come up with your own line.
Yeah, but I forgot how it went after that. Man. All I was practicing was the beginning part.
Well, we tried.
We tried our best, ladies and gentlemen.
New world.
There you go.
You found the key.
What's the next line? Oh.
Leah Thomas. I don't know. Now I'm embarrassed. For the first time in my life.
It happens to the best of us. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Will and Amala Live. Today's a fun Friday. Whoop whoop. I hope you guys are feeling well. Feeling
Will?
Toasty. Feeling Will.
Toasty.
You're feeling what Will just had to say?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Really good. We have so many stories to talk to you about today. We're going to be talking Disney, specifically a new movie they put out called Turning Red and Aladdin and this disclaimer that they now have on the Aladdin film. We're also going to be talking about cancel culture and how it affects free speech and does it really de-radicalize people. Joe Rogan's going to come into that conversation. Plus, we covered Leah Thomas winning all these swim championships with the NCAA. Tim Pool has jumped into the conversation with some words for the conservative movement and specifically the swimmers who are competing against Leah Thomas. So we'll get into that and make a judgment there. Plus, could you be earning more off of owning a house now than actually working a job in the United States? The answer just might be shocking. Also, should we be working from 9 to 5 every single day? This is something that we might disagree on as well. And a Kyle Rittenhouse meme has gone viral. Plus, for Fun Friday, we're going to be playing a game called Word Sneak, popularized by Jimmy Fallon in The Tonight Show. So we'll get in there. Now, let's start off with Aladdin. So this is not necessarily new news, but it's something that popped up on Twitter that I was surprised to see. Taylor was surprised to see, and I didn't know this was the case for Disney Plus. Now, if you go and try to watch Aladdin, this disclaimer pops up on the movie. This program includes negative depictions and or mistreatment of people or cultures. These stereotypes were wrong then and are wrong now. Rather than remove this content, we want to acknowledge its harmful impact. Learn from it and spark a conversation to create a more inclusive future together. Disney is committed to creating stories with inspirational and aspirational themes that reflect the rich diversity of the human experience around the globe.
Do they give an example of what part they're talking about?
No, they do not. No, they do not. And I've been thinking, because I've watched this movie, of course, on several occasions, especially as a young child, and I'm trying to think of what is particularly harmful. I know that, of course, they depict the culture in Aladdin through a stereotypical lens, as they do with many cultures. You could say that Mulan is depicted through a stereotypical lens. Anastasia is depicted through a stereotypical lens. And I'm assuming these disclaimers pop up on those movies as well. I'm not sure.
It's on a bunch of movies, yeah.
Well, Aladdin and the Lamp is a story from 1001 Nights, you know, the Arabian Nights.
Yes.
It's a classic tale.
Yes.
I mean, those weren't written by white men. Those were written in Arabia, you know, in the golden age of Islam.
Right.
So it's not like if they're depicting the story and having a stereotypical, it's like Muslims wrote the story.
Yep.
That you are criticizing is harmful.
Yeah.
I don't know what part they're talking about. Maybe where Jasmine is in her little skimpy outfit at the end, and that's harmful for people?
I think it's very similar to the criticism that was set towards people like Dr. Seuss for creating characters that sort of had this cultural stereotype attached to them and in the way that they were animated and the things that they said, which I just think is ridiculous because it is a depiction of a culture that does exist and does have stereotypes, much like any other culture that is in existence.
But what? So, what in Aladdin? What are any of the stereotypes?
I'm fine with any. I don't know. I don't think there's anything problem.
There's literally
right.
nothing
Aladdin.
Like wrong about Muslims.
I'll try to look into it.
It's not woke
Arabic
enough. It's not
people.
Politically correct enough. That's
I know, but
the
what
only
I'm
reason.
Saying, what even is, what's wrong?
I don't know. It's
Can you
probably
not make a story about
was
Muslim
the actor
people?
Who voiced Aladdin white?
Probably. Yeah. It's like Simba's actor, Matthew Broderick. He was white.
Uh-oh.
He should have been black. Mm-hmm. He's an African lion.
Right.
Not some white lion.
Unless it was a South African lion.
South African lion. Yeah, that's true. Elon Musk, the lion.
Yeah.
Taking back the technocratic
diamonds.
Pride land.
Okay, I looked into this. Okay, so the opening song in the film Arabian Nights also features offensive lyrics such as describing the fictional city of Agrabah, the place where the movie is set and thought to be based on South Asia or Middle East, as barbaric. That's the way that the city is described, apparently, in this film. And that is something that is barbarian, shocking.
Barbaric. I mean, barbarian is a real word that described a group of people, you know. When you use the word barbaric, I mean, that's legit.
Right. And I mean, it's yeah. meant to describe a place where, you know, I believe in the beginning, Aladdin goes to steal something while he's walking through this marketplace and somebody goes to chop off his hand.
Right.
In the movie, he gets within.
Because that's what happened in ancient cultures like that.
Right. Within moments of getting his hand chopped off for I think, stealing a loaf of bread or something to that effect. I don't know. What do you describe that as? Is there another term for it? And especially when it's people of that culture describing it. They also complain here.
Harsh.
They say, whereas in movies such as Aladdin, the evil characters have non-American accents, such as Gazeem and Jafar.
So
they're not Americans.
They have to be.
Wait, who's Gazeem?
They have to have an American accent if they're going to be
Gazeem
evil.
Gazeem isn't a character.
I think Gazeem is maybe the parrot with Jafar.
No, but that's an American accent. He's like New York.
Yeah, was that annoying guy who was.
Yeah, what's his name? I forget his name.
I forgot his name.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
I'm learning so much about Aladdin. Let's look at who Gazeem
is.
Like
a New Yorker guy. You know what I'm talking about, Sky?
Gazeem is this old looking.
Oh, at the beginning.
Man here in the beginning of the film.
Yeah, the parrot's name. Somebody help us in the chat. What was the parrot's name?
Yeah, what was it? His name?
Yago?
Yago. 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 I-A-G-O.
Yago.
Yago.
Yeah. I-A-G-O.
Yep.
But who's the actor?
What was his name?
Alan
Gilbert
Tudyk?
Godfrey.
Yes, he's got that voice.
Gilbert Godfrey.
Ah! Yeah,
I want to do the impression, like, yeah. but it's so hard.
I'm learning so much.
I don't know how to do it. But that's,
he's so annoying.
You know.
But not in a bad way.
He's a villain, too. He has a New York accent, and he sounds like a white.
They're just, yeah.
It's really just grasping at straws.
Right.
And it's not woke.
Jafar's accent is British, right?
Probably.
Isn't it like a British accent?
I don't know. We should have watched Aladdin.
I've seen Aladdin multiple times.
Look, all like I'm going to say is, I mean, okay, so Amla just watched the new, controversial
we'll get into
movie,
that.
Red Panda. I would rather my kids watch Aladdin than that. Not that I have kids right now, but if I had kids, I would say, watch Aladdin. I don't want you watching anything Disney's made since like 2010.
Right.
Right.
It's not like Jafar's coming in as like, kill the infidels, Allahu Akbar or something. Like he's,
right.
What are you... There's nothing stereotypical or bad. They're all
they
Muslim.
Have to grasp.
They're
it was made Arabic. In the past, so there must be something bad about it. That's what the idea is here. There must be something bad about it. Therefore, we have to search through it, find things, complain about them, then put up a disclaimer so that we can virtue signal and look like we've done something.
What people don't understand is that everything in the past was bad. I mean, if you're comparing it to today's standards, I mean, how does a 21st century person, like if you look back at like Native Americans and the wars of Native Americans, the Native Americans during the wars for America, many of them viewed it as battles. Like they didn't view it in many of the early years of the of people coming to America. They didn't view it as an invasion or something like they viewed it as these are battles that we are fighting for our land for because they had been fighting with people forever. It's like you go back in ancient history and you look at all these different civilizations and you compare it to today, you're going to be like, wow, like I can't even look at it in the same scope of mind or history mm-hmm. lens to even have any sort of comparison. I mean, even ancient Greece, even ancient Rome, I mean, they only gave really like ancient Rome in the later years of ancient Rome was giving land and voting rights to men who owned land,
mm-hmm.
right? And like that was seen as pretty progressive for the time compared to the rest of the world.
Right.
But if you look at it from a lens of today, I mean, and this is a children's movie too, so I don't even know why I'm bringing up historical context.
Yeah,
it's
just crazy. It's crazy.
But that's, you know, you can't even quantify like the degree of change that the world has gone through. And to compare it to something like that, to our 21st century liberal progressive mindset of these people, it's just asinine to make that type of comparison.
Yeah, let things exist as they existed. I don't know why we have to view things through the lens of modernity every single time we look at something. It's
reject
so crazy.
Modernity.
It's so
embrace
crazy.
Tradition.
Yeah, at this point, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah, all that is baked, the assumption is baked in that your values today are better than they were then. And like, again, what you're judging it by, what it's lacking in your mind is woke narratives, is all these ideas of identity politics infused into the narrative. And so it's about identity politics rather than about the story of Aladdin, which is actually like the focus of those Disney movies. Sure, here and there, if you nitpick and look at like little details, you can find things that we might not do today by like, you know, general standards that we could maybe improve upon. But that's not the lens that they're looking at it through. They're looking at it through the lens of everything should be woke. Everything should have the racial quotas. Everything should be, you know, push these narratives to children about how they, and frame the world to teach them to look at the world, how we see the world in this modern, you know, hyper progressive lens. And I don't want my kids to see that.
But there is nothing to change about Aladdin. Yeah. There's literally nothing.
Yeah, I know. That's what Aladdin. I'm saying. I'm struggling to find one
Aladdin
thing
is
that
so
I
good.
Think is bad.
It was actually heralded as being like this feminist movie because Jasmine was like, you know, they're trying to arrange a marriage for me. I just want to be with myself and be with my tiger and like, I don't need anybody, Raja.
There's a cat.
And like, it was heralded as like, oh my gosh, look at this woman of color who's a feminist and all these things. And now that's not good enough.
Right. Right.
It's never going to be good enough.
It's too woke for me. I don't know if I can watch Aladdin. It's too woke for me. You think I'm going to watch any of this new stuff? Aladdin's already too woke for me.
You know? No, she goes traditional. Like, she's going to be the strong, independent woman who doesn't need no man, and then she falls in love.
Right, no, exactly. So I like the end, you know? But the street rap parties, this poor, you know, he's this proletariat fighting against the bourgeois.
Yep.
You know, that's...
It's an authentic story, and they don't care about that. They care about it needs to be woke.
Well, it's a story from hundreds and hundreds of years
ago. Right, exactly.
You know, the original. Obviously, they don't follow it to a T with a lot of the stuff, but still.
You know, right.
It's so stupid.
What
other movies did they put that on? What are some of the other... Because they put that on other Disney movies, too. Didn't they put that on the one with the Chinese cats?
Aristocats?
Yeah, and they're singing they have chopsticks and stuff. The cats?
Oh, heaven forbid.
You know what I'm talking about? The cats
vaguely.
Have like the slanted eyes and things.
Yeah, it's where the dogs fall in love, that movie. And the Siamese cats are within that movie.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Yeah, Lady and the Tramp.
It looks like Dumbo, The Jungle Book, Peter Pan, Lady and the Tramp, Aladdin, and the Aristocats all now have this disclaimer.
The Jungle Book? Oh, is that because the monkeys are black? Is that what they tried to do in King Louis, right?
I have no idea. Why?
I have no idea.
It sounds racist, like trying to speculate why they find something racist.
Yeah, I know.
Can we make it racist?
Like, oh, but you have to dig deep into the realm of like racial slurs to find out why somebody else found something racist. I don't know. I literally don't know.
As long as they don't come from my Lion King, I'm good.
Peter Pan, I don't know.
Peter Pan, obviously, because of Indians.
Oh, I don't remember there being Indians.
This is like playing that game, can we make it racist?
Yeah, can we make it racist? Like, we have to find a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea.
You can, though. That's the thing. If you look for racism, you can find it everywhere. And that's one of the tenets of critical race theory. Yeah, but one of the tenets of critical race theory is do not ask, is there racism or did it occur? Ask where is the racism and where did it occur? And I feel like that's this disclaimer is coming from that mentality of like, let's look back in the past and everything was wrong because it wasn't woke enough. So let's look at it and find these problems and find the racism. And
it would just be very interesting to go back to what Aladdin was 1993. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know it was in the Disney Renaissance era, but I'd be curious to know if anyone ever complained about Aladdin when it came out for not being woke enough and see if there's any article from any major publication or anything that ever came out and
Kimberly Crenshaw probably did.
Maybe. I was saying like I doubt that you could go back in time and find anything.
Yeah.
Everybody loved it. It was heralded as like a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just like reading through these criticisms. It's just unbelievable. They're saying that in Dumbo, leader of the group of crows is called Jim Crow, a reference to their racial laws, I guess. And it's a caricature of that, apparently. The Aristocats, which is set in France, features a Siamese cat called Shungon, who plays the piano with chopsticks and apparently sings racist lyrics. I'm not familiar with those lyrics. In a similar vein, Lady and the Tramp features two Siamese cats called Si and Am, who are evil characters and sing a song that contains racist tropes.
They're not evil. They just screw with Lady for a little bit.
Oh, gosh.
They sing, "We are Siamese, if you please."
You think a kid's going to see that and be like, I hate Asians.
Yeah. I know. That's how absurd this all is.
I can't believe these Asian cats are unbelievable. I'm going to go push this Asian girl in my kindergarten class now because I just watched the Aristocats.
Oh, brother. I've been watching Aristocrats and these Siamese cats. Get them out of my country.
Yeah, it's like, what?
That's going to be your kid.
Unbelievable. Meanwhile, Disney's putting out trash content. It's just, replace it with something good, at least if you're going to do something. Like, make good content. Don't make something that's completely, like, brainwashing children. And I did watch the new movie that everybody's talking about called Turning Red, and a lot of parents are up in arms about some of the things that are featured in the movie. And by and large, so I did watch this movie. Just to give you a overview of what the premise of the movie is, if you want to watch it again, it's called Turning Red, and it's on Disney+. It's about a 13-year-old girl who is going through this phase in her life. She's a Chinese American, I believe. And she has one of those, like, quote, kind of helicopter parents. Although if you ask me, the mother is not very much a helicopter parent by any means. She clearly cares about her daughter very much and is trying to guide her through this path to life. But the movie starts off with this soliloquy about how it's so important in Asian culture to honor your parents and to sort of do what they say and honor their guide. And then it breaks and you go to this girl and she's like dancing around. She goes, not me. I'm myself and I do whatever I want. I say whatever I want. I wear whatever I want and all these things. Okay, fine. You're a rebellious 13-year-old, but that's not the demographic that is meant to be watching this show. I'm assuming it's like 7 and 8-year-olds are going to watch.
Yeah, it looks like it. It's like an animated, you know, Pixar style animation on the movie. It's definitely not making that for teenagers.
21-year-old conservative podcasters.
Right. But I'm just watching this to tell you what I saw in the movie, especially if you're a parent who has Disney Plus and is showing your kids this content. So this girl wakes up one day and she's a panda all of a sudden. And it's this sort of euphemism for getting your period at 13 years old. And the mom starts freaking out and going, oh my gosh, she's so young and all this stuff. And starts talking about like ibuprofen and Advil and pads and things like that. And the mom embarrasses the girl by showing up to her school with pads and is like, hey, you forgot these, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, my mom's the worst. She sucks. She cares about me and shows up to my school to embarrass me. Okay, you're 13, totally get it. But with this period and becoming a woman comes this red panda character that she turns into when she gets particularly emotional or like overwhelmed with hormones or anything like that. She turns into this red panda. And it's about her guide and trying to accept that or get rid of it. And some concerning parts of the movie are her fantasizing about this crush that she has. And she's like drawing pictures of them kissing and doing things that are not, you know, typical for 7-year-olds or 8-year-olds to watch. And she writes it in this notebook. She even says at some point that this boy is sexy, or she's like envisioning sexy things with this boy. And the mom finds the notebook and is like, what is this? And sort of freaks out on her. Some other things is that the kids start falling in love with this panda character that she turns into and paying her to become this panda so that they can play with her and take pictures and all this stuff. So under her bed, the kids start making her all this like paraphernalia and basically merch for her panda character. And it says like fur baby, which anybody who's familiar with that sort of furry sexual kink culture, you know that those people call themselves fur baby.
Only Taylor knows about that.
Just because I read the article about that nuclear administration official.
Right.
Oh gosh, that's true.
That was creepy stuff.
Yeah, that is creepy stuff. So the mom finds this stuff under her bed and again freaks out on her. Is like, what is all this stuff? What does it mean to be a fur baby and all this stuff? And of course, she defies her mother and they fight back and forth. I'm trying to think of what else was really bad in this film. At one point, the mother and her get into an argument and they're both these panda characters and the girl's like, I'm gonna be me and I like to gyrate, and she starts shaking her butt in the air and her friends are cheering her on and everybody's like clapping for her, you know, saying like, shake your butt to your mom, shake your butt to your mom, and she keeps doing it over and over and the mom's like, I don't want to see this. And again, a 13-year-old girl, 7-year-olds are watching this show, not necessarily good. And then she ends the show in her normal human character, but she's wearing furry accessories like furry ears and a furry tail. Again, she's not the panda character at this point. She's a human being wearing this stuff. And the mom's like, you can't wear that to school. You can't go out in that. And the girl goes, my panda, my choice, mom. And then saunters off and walks away. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's definitely things in this movie. I noticed, I'm trying to like bring it together into maybe like 3 to 5 minutes of this movie that I watch where I'm like, okay, there's clearly a message in here that you're trying to indoctrinate children with.
Well, it's just how uncompelling of a concept to make a movie about girls having periods. I mean, that's such, you're isolating basically all the boys who would ever go and watch a Disney film. I mean, what in The Lion King? Mm-hmm. It's based off of Hamlet, okay? A classic Shakespeare play. Claudius, or Scar is Claudius, and Nala is basically Ophelia. It's based off this great work of fiction that takes all this inspiration, yet now you're making it about pandas and period.
Yeah.
What has happened? Like, even aside from even leftist stuff, like, why don't you just make something that's good?
Right.
You know, that's compelling for people, that relates to all sorts of people. But it's just not in their even frame of mind. These people are so stupid. None of them should receive any of your money. I mean, it's just terrible.
Yeah, it's like they're not sitting in the writer's room thinking like they used to. Like you talk about in the Renaissance era of Disney, of how do we take these great, transcendent, cultural stories from across cultures around the world, highlight them, bring them to life in a way that can be enjoyed by everybody, and that can, you know, that are laden with these sort of transcendent values that everyone can appeal to and identify with. And it's just part of being human, part of good things that we acknowledge. Now they start with, how can we get the way that we want young girls to think into their brains? Oh, what if we came up with a story about a panda that, you know, a girl that's coming of age and turns into, like, all the stuff we want to say about womanhood is wrapped up in this metaphor of a panda. And then we can put her in all these situations where she has attractions toward this older guy and she's rebelling against her mom and this and that. And it's like the story is just a backdrop or just a veneer for their ideology. And they're doing that with original stories. And then they're also, like, all these remakes and stuff, they're just taking, like, we talk about this new Lord of the Rings stuff and all these remakes now, you're just putting the trust that people have and the love that they have for these stories that were written in a great way and did have that transcendent value. And you're just using that as a veneer and putting your ideas in it. And then you're repackaging it, slapping a little, you know, cover of this awesome lore. And you're just putting your ideology into it. And that's all it's about for you. And I hate that.
It's finagling all this nonsense into all of these things.
It's grooming. It's really what it is.
It is. And there's so many movies where you can get that premise across of just, like, honor yourself and what you love and do that well. Mulan is a very similar movie when you think about it, to having, like, this Chinese American experience or just a Chinese experience interwoven into it. And this girl who sort of rebels against her parents and goes, you know what? No, for my country and for my family, I'm going to fight and I'm going to do this. And that carries the same sentiment. But when you couple it with just radicalism and this woke ideology and my panda, my choice for little kids, it sends a very clear-cut message that, one, you don't care what parents think, and that you feel very comfortable with utilizing the power you have over children's entertainment and what sticks with them in childhood to circumvent the power that parents have and should have with their kids. And that is not okay.
Also, boys could still watch Mulan and enjoy it.
Right.
You know, it's like, this is a movie that is about war and cool stuff and people fighting and little dragon with Eddie Murphy and things. You know, it's great. It's a great movie, and for a lot of reasons, not everything, but it's a great movie. And boys can enjoy it too, but it's just a feminization of children's movies to turn everyone into a little girl.
Yeah, if Disney wanted to make a set of resources for young kids or girls who are going through puberty and don't know what's going on, or boys who are going through puberty and don't know what's going on, and they want to package that and say, hey, parents, here's a resource for your kids if you want to have this conversation, but do it in sort of this nice kid-friendly lens, by all means do that, but don't sell me this BS about honoring your parents and defying them and your body, your choice, and finding your own identity and just defying the things that are the typical norms for being a woman. It's just like, come on, come on. And there were moments that I was watching the movie and I went, you know what? This is not that bad. And then seconds later, something would happen. And that's how they get you. They package it with, like, these beautiful messages and high points and low points to where you go, well, there's not that much indoctrination in the film. Right. Like, overall, maybe there's, like, 3 or 4 minutes to this 1 hour, 50 minute movie. But those messages get through.
Mm-hmm. My kids are only watching the Pokemon anime, the first season, and Goosebumps.
Yep.
That's it.
There you go.
My kids are watching PragerU Kids only. Leo and Layla. History adventures.
That's right.
No, it's just crazy that you're going to have to, like, have kids and, like, watch everything that they watch before they watch it. You're going to have to, like, go through it and be like, is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay?
Well, no, they're only going to watch stuff that I watched.
Well, that helps too.
I mean, obviously they're going to see things that I don't know what they
are.
Yeah,
of course.
But like, as a kid, like a little kid, I'm not just going to say, here's an iPad, go to town on YouTube.
Yeah.
Now, parents need to do a better job themselves.
They do.
You need to do a better job as a parent by not just sticking an iPad or one of these stupid, horrible Netflix shows in front of your kid and just putting them there.
And that's how they get you too.
Your kid. Mm-hmm.
That's how the platforms get you, because they go like, oh, like, here's this app and we know there's crazy stuff on it, but you have parental programming. So turn on the parental programming and then you know that everything your child is getting is fine. Right. And then they turn it on and then it's still the same stuff, the same garbage.
They used to have like all that weird sexualized stuff on the the kids on YouTube, on the YouTube kids.
Yes.
With like all the people dressed in like Disney costumes and doing weird, all sorts of stuff. And it was kids' content.
Mm-hmm.
Sick people out there.
Next up for your child, Drag Queen Story Hour.
Well, right, that too. But these people get so much money off of the ad revenue because it just plays and plays and plays that they'll just put crap on there and just let it play.
Yeah, it's a very real problem.
It really is. But
yeah.
If you're not really in the parenting world or know people, you might not know about it. But it's very, you just got to be careful what you're showing your kids.
Yeah,
seriously.
I mean, Taylor, we were talking about this the other day. They have it down to a science with even the thumbnail. mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. who's viewing it from what device, and they can tell, and they could change the thumbnail so that it's more appealing to younger kids.
Yeah.
And to the parent, it may just look somewhat innocent, but the actual messaging behind the video, completely different.
Yeah, it's scary.
No.
Yeah, you used to be able to trust, you know, that like, okay, this is on Disney Kids Channel. Like, it's going to be relatively appropriate for my kids. Because even like as recently as 20, 30 years ago, we had enough shared social fabric, shared values. People were still, you know, I don't know, still loved the idea of all that America has always stood for. And that was still like the foundation enough to where you could let your kid, well, like my parents let us watch, you know, kid shows. I mean, mm-hmm. they were like generally aware, I guess. I wasn't allowed to watch like Rugrats because Angelica was rebellious. So they knew, but like, you know, we could turn on whatever.
<That's hilarious.
laughs> And, you know, there was like a lot more, you know, level of trust that parents could have. And now I would not, like, if I haven't seen it, I don't want my kid
Dude,
watching.
You remember?
My mom was very easy on me. Like that explains a lot. I listened to whatever music and whatever TV and played whatever video games and stuff like that.
I remember when I was a kid, it was crazy to meet other kids that like their parents wouldn't let them watch SpongeBob. I used to be like, your mom doesn't let you watch SpongeBob? Like that's so crazy. And now looking back and watching it, you see like the adult themes and everything that you would never understand as a kid.
SpongeBob was great.
And that was crazy for us back then. Now it's just like pure sexualization, propaganda, political messaging, and parents are just like, here you go.
Yeah, it's much worse now than when we were kids.
So much worse. If SpongeBob was the worst that we were facing when we were kids, like look at what's happening now.
The stuff that my friends wouldn't be allowed to do, that I would be allowed to do, is more like violent video games.
Yep.
And I was fine. My mom didn't care at all. And I think that was actually good for me, playing violent video games as a kid. I know some of you guys won't agree, but I think it was good for me. Little boys have a knack for wanting to do and let their emotions out like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I knew kids who wouldn't do that, and then they'd tattle on me when I'd bring them over and play violent video games.
Yeah.
So.
And back rats. In the day.
Rats.
Back when times were good. Now, now that we've talked about Disney.
Giving you a parenting lesson from our resident mid-20s.
Sloppy Joe of a conversation.
This is what we see. I mean, it's something to talk about, though. And I think people are following it and they see what's happening. Now, let's talk about cancel culture. New York Times put out this article titled "America Has a Free Speech Problem," and of course it got a lot of heat on Twitter and on all these social media platforms because the New York Times is not really this paragon of free speech as far as it stands right now. They start off by saying, "For all the tolerance and enlightenment that modern society claims, Americans are losing hold of a fundamental right as citizens of a free country: the right to speak their minds and voice their opinions in public without fear of being shamed or shunned." And they go through.
That's important that they said that.
It is.
Because there is the right to speak your mind does not mean that you don't get shamed or shunned.
I completely agree.
I mean, you can speak freely and say the N-word or do whatever you want. It doesn't mean that you're not going to get shamed or shunned. That's not the point of free speech. You have mm-hmm. social consequences for the things that you say. It's that you have the legal precedent to be able to say those things.
Yep. Right.
Not that you're free from consequences. Of course you have consequences for what you say.
And that's really interesting that somebody at the New York Times thinks that it's your right to not be met with fear or shame or being shunned for what you say. That's how they interpret your right to freedom of speech. That's crazy. And it's a sign of the times.
Right.
That's like Gen Z encapsulated in, sign of the New York Times. Right. but they go on to really accuse the left and the right, saying that many on the left refuse to acknowledge that cancel culture exists at all, believing that those who complain about it are offering cover for bigots to peddle hate speech. Many on the right, for all their braying about cancel culture, have embraced an even more extreme version of censoriousness as a bulwark against a rapidly changing society with laws that would ban books, stifle teachers, and discourage open conversation in class. See, this is like, you know, you had me for a second there. And I'm not saying
that's what they always do, though. They always have the veneer of saying, you know, trying to give the other side to show like, no, I'm moderate, you know. I could listen to both sides. Sometimes I vote Republican, sometimes I vote. No, these people are on the left. The New York Times wouldn't let them put this out if they weren't on the left.
Yeah.
It's always a facade of trying to show a little bit of decency and a little bit of anti your own side. But don't take these people seriously when they say that kind of stuff. It's all a charade.
Yeah, and it's not to say that there's not criticism on the right, but not as it pertains to this issue for the most part. There's really not. And it's very clear to look at the current climate that we're in with cancel culture and censorship and see politically what side of the aisle that lies on. Come on, guys. And when we say this all the time, when we advocate for free speech, we're advocating for everyone's free speech, not just people who agree with us. Everyone. Anything you want to say, we're advocating for. Other than, of course, like fire in a crowded theater. You know, and that's what we talk about. Apparently, there's a poll out of Times Opinion in Senior College. Only 34% of Americans say that they believe all Americans enjoy freedom of speech completely. The poll also found that 84% of adults said it was a very serious or somewhat serious problem that Americans do not speak freely in everyday situations because of fear of retaliation or harsh criticism. It's funny that they're saying that 84% of adults agree with this. Where are they?
Wait, say that again?
84% of adults said that it was very serious or somewhat serious of a problem that some Americans do not speak freely in everyday situations because of fear of retaliation or harsh criticism.
I think that that's true.
I think it's true, but I wish that those 84% of people would speak up and say something.
Well, I also think that it's true, but it's largely true because institutions like the New York Times impose politically correct culture on us. And so it's really ironic that they're complaining about this problem or trying to act like, you know, they're concerned about free speech and trying to solve it, when the whole reason people are afraid to speak up is because you've been normalizing political correctness for the last several decades.
Well, because our journalists are vultures. That's what journalism is nowadays. It's just a bunch of
and their whole newsroom
vultures of evil people who want to see people destroyed.
Yeah,
that's all journalism is. You're a wing of the elite, and you just go after people, destroying them when your boss tells you that you need to go and find dirt on someone. That's all journalism is nowadays. It's useless. Journalism is supposed to be a tool to control the elite, to hold them accountable. I mean, you can even go back to like 2014 with the Pandora Papers, where you had like 600 journalists from like 117 different countries that worked together to expose this thing and this corruption. And now what do we have? I mean,
these
people are the problem. Journalists are the problem. They should all be sent to an island.
I love your extreme forms of punishment that you just give out on this, this program.
Straight to jail.
Yeah. A very cold island.
It used to be rare that you would read, you know, the newspaper and just find like a bunch of opinion pieces. That's all it is today.
Yeah.
All it is. It's just op-eds. And it used to be that they would go at a situation that journalists would look for situations that people were arguing about or finding differing opinions on it, and then try to find the objective facts and simply give them to you so that you could be armored in your discussions with other people. Now it's not that. They go and find what could be considered objective facts sometimes, and then they cherry pick what works best for their argument. They place that into an article for you, and through that article, and you can even see this when reading headlines, you can read a headline and see what the article is going to decide for you before you even read it. And so they take these facts that they find, they cherry pick them, they throw them into an article, and then they put their opinions into it. And sometimes they don't even publish them as opinion pieces. They're simply putting it out and saying, this is what the New York Times says about this matter.
Yeah. 90% of journalists are terrible people.
Where'd you get that specific stat?
It's fact checked.
Oh, okay.
By me.
Okay.
I know
10 journalists and only one of them is good. So 90% are going to the island.
Just trying to find via search. I couldn't find anything right now, but if you guys do, let us know. But I was trying to find what the percent of political donations of New York Times employees go to. A lot of times that's public information. You can find out about that. But
that's
like, I guarantee you that there's, I mean, it's just like our universities and big tech companies, et cetera. They're all staffed by 90% of their staff donations go to toward Democrats, toward the left. And
of course, 92% of university professors consider themselves on the left.
Exactly.
You know,
and they come out of universities and go to places like New York Times and Google and et cetera.
Right.
But if you're really concerned about free speech and not having a PC culture and having people afraid to speak their minds, how about employing people from both sides of the aisle who speak their minds and platforming their voices so people feel represented and heard in journalism, and so that you're at least don't talk about both sides of this whole issue whenever your whole paper is all about enforcing one point of view and one narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, I'm not.
No one's falling for this.
Yeah. I guess I care less about the political opinion side of it, because people are always going to be biased, and I care more about the not holding people accountable who should be held accountable standard.
That too.
Because obviously, you know, New York Times has been liberal for a long time. Since the 1940s, they were propping up Stalin, you know, all the way back then. The New York Times supported what Stalin was doing. And so they've always been liberal. This has been a problem for a long time.
I mean,
and
they
so
also let Hitler do an op-ed.
If a newspaper wants to be liberal, that's fine. If Fox News wants to be conservative, I think that's fine. It's about the journalism is supposed to be about holding elites accountable mm-hmm. for the actions that they commit upon the regular people, because journalists are supposed to be regular people. That was the profession. It was a regular person profession, not an ivory tower profession. Now it is just a potpourri of just terrible people who don't hold anyone accountable, who just say, I'm going to do this to get brownie points with the leftist superiors or elitist superiors, whatever it is.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's important. I think they should all be very forthright about, like, this is what I believe, mm-hmm. and this is the bias that this news site holds, or this is right. the bias that we lean towards. I don't know why we can't acknowledge that. Everybody's trying to, and on the left and right, everybody's trying to sell you their basket as if that's exactly what's true and that there's no opinion and no bias on it at all.
Right. There's always
going to
be bias.
Why can't we be honest about that?
Right. It's the veneer of objectivity that they hold and pretend yeah. like they are the gold standard for journalism. And yeah. so to make give you the guise of credibility, objectivity, oh, if I listen to New York Times, I'm getting neutral information.
Right.
That's the part I don't like. But I agree with you that their job is also to hold the elites accountable, but they are the elites and they are enforcing the narrative.
Yeah. I mean, the New York Times is owned problem. By BlackRock. I mean, major shares in BlackRock on the New York Times.
Yeah.
It's no surprise of the things that they put out there.
Now, let's get into this sort of interesting discussion as it surrounds cancel culture and censorship. This was brought up by Joe Rogan. So here's the headline on this article from The Blaze. Joe Rogan blasts woke virtue signaling big tech CEOs for censorship, slams big pharma execs, and the lyingest liars that ever lied. That sounds like
Sorry,
something
I missed
Joe
the
Rogan
first,
but
was
say.
That article about Will Witt?
What did I say?
That does sound about right.
Wait, what was it? What did I say?
Joe Rogan blasts woke virtue signaling big tech CEOs for censorship, slams big pharma execs as the liars.
You're saying it's like, well, okay.
Yeah, it's as though you could have said
like
the lyingest liars that ever lied.
Okay.
Big pharma.
Got it. They are the lyingest liars that ever lied.
It's very creative. Slam.
It sounds a lot like Joe. So Joe Rogan had Daryl Davis on his show, who had his claim to fame as this black man who would reach out to KKK members and de-radicalize them through conversation and sort of giving them a different worldview and a different scope from what they believed. And he's been known, as this article cites, to get more than 200 Klansmen to turn in their robes personally to him, which is quite the feat, an amazing thing for somebody to dedicate their life and their time to. So they had this conversation about what it means to de-radicalize people and whether or not censorship and cancel culture plays a role in that action. And for the most part, came to the consensus that actually censorship does the exact opposite. You find these people on the internet who you disagree with, or you find their views to be extremist or radical, and then you go, okay, I'm going to take you off the platform. What do those people then do? Those people do not then stop believing what they believed and go, you know what, because this person deplatformed me, I've suddenly had this change of heart. In fact, what they believe gets even stronger. And now because you've censored it, they feel this sort of credibility to the things that they believed. Why would you stomp down something that is wholly untrue? Mainly you want to stamp down people who are saying things that are true and saying things that go against our narratives. So these people then go find these coves of others who agree with them and who share that sentiment and in fact get radicalized in the things that they believed because you censored them. And I think it's something that we don't talk about enough when it comes to the censorship discussion.
Yeah. I think Joe Rogan is pretty right on that if you do censor people, they are going to lash out and become more radical.
I believe it even harder now.
Yeah, exactly. who's saying that it does the opposite?
That censorship makes people radical.
The critique is that big institutions, like when Google censors you, big tech, when Facebook censors posts and people that aren't allowed, when the New York Times doesn't allow you to have a platform, they're saying, we're not giving you a platform because your voice radicalizes people. And so mm-hmm. that's their goal, is preventing radicalization by using censorship.
Yep.
And the critique is your censorship encourages radicalization.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously some truth to that. If no one gets to hear the opinions, then, you know, there's obvious truth to that. But
you're not defeating the ideas just by taking them off of the marketplace of ideas.
Of course not. You know, but if you think of like a George Orwell type of civilization, no one even knows the ideas exist. You know,
that's their goal.
That's what I'm saying. So if a certain degree of censorship, you will have, they are right. But that really shows their hand. Because it shows that you have to get to a truly totalitarian state to even be able to enact that level of censorship to snuff out radicalization.
And that's their goal.
Right. Yeah. These people are evil. So
It's a trade-off because it's like, okay, so you find somebody, let's use the alt-right, as the left likes to call it, as an example. You find somebody who's alt-right on Twitter and you go, well, I don't want this person to be able to influence others and become a mild version of this alt-right-ism that I'm seeing right now. So let's censor this person. So what you've done is, okay, maybe you stopped 10 people or 100 people or even 1,000 people from hearing this guy's opinions and going, oh, well, that sounds kind of right. But what you've created is a man that's now tuned up to 100 in the things that he believed before, who is going to find other people who are tuned to that same frequency. So really, you've created what is just a small nest of even more radical and extreme people who actually carry out actions that become, you know, extreme for anybody. And that's
not always, sometimes for the better, you know, sometimes for the better. If you get censored that much, it might be a kick in the pants to go and actually do something.
Yeah, I mean, in 1984, you know? There has to be some resistance, you know, right, the people exactly. who find each other, you know? And resist against
yeah.
the
so, you know, it doesn't, I hate the word radicalized. That just sounds, the it already has a connotation with it that it's bad, you know, but it's like what this can actually be taken as is that you deplatform someone and it actually strengthens or emboldens them, you know, like you get deplatformed mm-hmm. and it makes you want to fight harder, which yep. doesn't, the way they make it sound makes it sound like, oh, it's a bad thing.
It's galvanizing. Like,
what's that?
It's galvanizing. Yes.
Right, right.
Yes.
And it's like, it's not, it doesn't have to be a bad thing. Yeah, you might, you know, some white supremacist Nazi person who you silence might get stronger and radicalized.
Exactly.
But like some person who's like talking about the truth when it comes to vaccines or Ukraine or something and they get censored and now they're talking about it even more on their own platform or whatever.
Right.
And it might be a kick in the pants for them to do more. I don't know.
Right. There's varying degrees. Yeah.
And that's what spurs polarization and distrust for institutions and all mm-hmm. the things that they complain about.
Right.
But
well, censorship spurs distrust of institutions.
Exactly.
That's like the number one thing.
Right.
100%. Yeah. It's interesting. So they go on in this discussion to sort of try to acknowledge, do you think these big tech platforms know that they are creating people who become more radical by censoring them and are thus doing that on purpose? That's something Joe disagrees and says, no, I don't think they're doing it on purpose. And they knowingly admit that they are creating people who are more radical or more extreme in their views by censoring them. They think they actually are achieving their goal.
Yeah, I think that they believe that there is a right way to think. And when people don't think that way, they think they're doing good by removing their voices from the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they believe that we are helping create a society where these dangerous voices and dangerous ideas are not being shown to people. And I think that their commitment to free speech is not deeper than their commitment to their desire for their ideas to rule.
Let's play devil's advocate here. Let's talk January 6th and how this all started and how that then became utilized as an attack against conservatives. Do you think people on big tech were like, I'm so glad I censored them enough to make them this angry that they felt the need to do something like this? Do you think that's part of like a more nefarious plan? Like we created this thing that became January 6th, or that it's just a consequence of right. actions that they thought were good?
Well, I think the latest James O'Keefe on the January 6th stuff, just using that as an example, was mm-hmm. pretty evident with just in that case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-mm.
One of the latest videos with New York Times is that the New York Times got exposed, one of their journalists by Project Veritas, who was coming and saying, you know, the January 6th stuff wasn't that big of a deal, but we made it a big deal.
Right.
And that's huge for them to say that, because January 6th and some of these people not even going into the Capitol and then having SWAT teams and the Fed show up to their houses and arresting them from their families in the middle of the night, modern day Gestapo, I mean, it's terrible. And you still have these prisoners in these horrible DC cells. And it's like they knew what they were doing and they propped it up anyway,
mm-hmm.
sacrificing these people for their agenda. So, yeah, I think these people definitely know what they're doing and they just don't care.
Yeah, I don't think that started with a plan of like, oh, we're going to start censoring people and hope that they show up at the Capitol. I don't think they've like, but when
no,
it happened.
Not specifically, right, but no. I mean like
but
something
when it happened,
will happen.
I think they were thrilled because they're like, oh, now we have something that we can puff up to be the evidence that supports our rationale for imposing censorship.
Right.
And then we can now censor even harder and go after these people and really make an example of them if you violate the mainstream narrative.
Well, think about it. Think about it like when we have a thing for the show and we see a story and it's big story that a lot of people are talking about. We're excited to talk about it, right? And we want to give our opinions on it. So now think of it in the frame of, okay, you're a leftist and you're working in one of these institutions. You have a responsibility. You're getting paid for this. And also you feel this moral obligation to talk about it and, and prove that you are morally superior and something like this happens, you are excited to be as bombastic and terrible to these people as possible to showcase your moral superiority. So I think sure. that just as a someone who
that's what the woke place, teachers on TikTok that we react to are doing.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, I think these people relish in the fact that they get to smear people and destroy them. I mean, really, journalists are the worst people in America. I will repeat that. They really are. Journalists and pedophiles. Some of these people are truly evil people. And they know what they're doing. They totally know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's become hard to differentiate whether or not, you know, what intent is at this moment in time, and which is why I sort of toe the line of not getting into that accusation, because I think there are people where you can just catch them and you just know. You know exactly what you're doing. You've said it. It's there. It's very clear. You couldn't be doing the job that you're doing without knowing what it is that you're doing. And then I think there are people who are pawns. And it's become so, we've become so entrenched in this problem and this polarization and divide that it's hard to tell the difference between somebody who's a pawn and somebody who knows exactly what they're doing.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Go ahead.
I'm just at the people at the top, there's no doubt
they know
what they're doing.
That's why I say elites and leftists are different.
So if
for
the
me.
Elites are using these leftists as pawns and as tools, let's mm-hmm. say they are. I don't necessarily always agree with that. Let's say they mm-hmm. are. Then if they're learning that from their bosses, then I think many of these people have no problem as also using other people as pawns and tools for their upbringing. You know, think about people just like, not even in a political sense, people are willing to step all over other people to achieve greatness and, you know, maybe their business or finance or, you know, whatever it is. It's just kind of human nature in a way.
Yeah, it's just like, do you know you're doing it? So like George Soros, who we would consider to be evil and doing nefarious things and knowing he's doing nefarious things, funds the leftist organization that I worked for when I was 17. Okay, so he's the evil elite in this case and the organization is the pawn. Then they hire me and I go and indoctrinate young people. So technically I'm a player now who's creating other pawns, but am I consciously aware that what I'm doing is evil and wrong? No. So at that point, you have multiple
in terms of journalism
layers.
Yeah, I think in terms of journalism, it's different.
Yeah, when somebody has the facts and chooses not to put them out, yes,
right,
definitely different. Yeah.
Exactly.
My thought is just we can all agree on that the ideology, this woke far left ideology, that all these people are pawns of that, and that ideology itself is evil. And so yes. If you are I think it's unhelpful sometimes to get bogged down in trying to figure out if the intent of people are all the way like, okay,
right.
Are they fully encapsulated by this, or are they just being used by it unwittingly and they have good intentions? Like, it gets bogged down, but we can agree that their ideas are bad. And mm-hmm. I always go back to that quote by Carl Jung, and he said, people don't have ideas. Ideas have people. And
mm-hmm.
even biblically, you know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. And so the idea is we have to defeat their ideas and this radical ideology, expose it for what it is, call it out for what it is, show how evil it is, and be unequivocal and unapologetic about that. But I think it's, I don't know, I get lost, and it's unhelpful to say, like, you know, this person is evil and I have to
yes.
defeat him.
Yes.
You know?
But I think where that conversation and where, this will be the last thing I say on this, where finding intent for a person is important is because you find out who it is that you can, I don't want to say save, but who it is that you can reach and who it is that you can't.
And who you can destroy.
Now, since we are running late on time here, we'll probably have a little bit of a longer episode today, but let's get into these Tim Pool comments really quick and just get a quick feel, a quick pulse on how everybody feels on this.
I frame this as agree or disagree.
Yes, agree or disagree, definitely. And we won't get too in the weeds, but of course Leah Thomas is coming out and winning all of these NCAA swim competitions. You know Leah Thomas as the transgender swimmer who competed for 4 years as a male for Penn State, ranking in I think the 400s for among male swimmers, and has now become the number one female swimmer for Penn State and really for the entire United States.
University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
University of Pennsylvania.
Fact checker over here.
Yes. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. And Tim Pool tweeted this out today. If women competing in the NCAA sport, support the rules, allowing Leah Thomas to swim and celebrate their second and third place medals, then what's the problem? If they don't like it, they can stop participating in it. Clearly, they support it. These parents and athletes all privately complain about Leah Thomas, but refuse to stand up and do anything about it publicly. Your values require sacrifice, risk, and conviction. If you don't have that, then no one can help you. I do not believe anyone is entitled to anything. Values, resources, and life in general require work and sacrifice. If you refuse to stand up and take the risk required to fight the battle needed, then I don't believe you deserve anything. Any initial thoughts? Basically saying, why are we coming to bat for these swimmers, these female swimmers, if they're continuing to compete and they're celebrating the medals that they do win against Leah Thomas? Why should we be having this argument? We've created the bed, now we're laying in that bed.
Right. Yeah, I think when I have kids and they're performing in sports, and if there's a man performing against my girl, I would take her out of it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this is ridiculous. I'm not competing.
But is this a fight that we should not be fighting now because these girls are allowing it? Is really the question. Should we just be allowing this to happen and not say anything about it because these girls are accepting it and they're swimming regardless?
No, I mean,
well, no, it's still something to talk about, of course, but it's because these girls wouldn't do anything at all if no one talked about it, because mm-hmm. they need to be pressured into doing something. You know, if this is the NCAA champion, these girls know what they're supposed to do. They should drop out. I agree. But people need to be out there shaming people and elites to like figure this out.
And I think a big part of this that we should talk about is that the people who are fighting this now, even though they may not be the athletes who are competing in the sport, are not just fighting for these female athletes. They're fighting for the future of the sport.
Right.
They're fighting for their kids who are going to, hopefully, we want our kids to be able to participate in extracurriculars and sports and activities.
They're fighting for womanhood itself.
Yeah, they're fighting for just womanhood in general, because a small acceptance of this is a large one in many cases. So I tend to disagree with this in saying, like, why do I care about these girls if they're going to continue to compete? Because you have to think about the future, and it's not sustainable.
I think that if every single woman at that swim meet would have said, no, we're not competing, what would they have done?
Yeah.
What could they have done? They said Leah Thomas just wins by default or something because she's the only one who swims. I doubt it.
And
it'd be a huge story. It'd be a way bigger thing, and people would really be talking about it.
Right.
You know, if every single girl would have just done that, but they didn't do it.
But it's like the Olympics.
Right.
It's like we had our
talks about the Olympics, and we both agreed that, you know, we should have boycotted that too.
Yep.
To make a stand. I think that people have to take those stands, even when it's really hard.
Right.
I think what Tim Pool said is work and sacrifice. He is right. No one is saying this wouldn't be a hard decision to make for these girls. It's no doubt
and
about
to be
it.
Fair, it's not to be fair to these girls, it's not fair that you're put in the position to have to do this fight.
Right.
But, you know, like Gandalf told Frodo, so do all who live to see such times. But you have to decide this is the moment that you're living in, and it's bigger than even your scholarship. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's like a really hard thing to say to someone. This is womanhood itself is at stake. Women's rights, the integrity of your sport that you've put so much into is at stake. And you have the opportunity here to make a stand and do something great. And that's even bigger than your scholarship. I mean, that's what I would tell my daughter in this situation.
Right.
And it's not an easy thing. And I can't necessarily like hold it against you for not standing up. And, you know, but at the end of the day, that is what the courageous and like the right thing to do in that situation is.
And it
I'd
sucks.
Say I'd tell my son the same thing, but. A woman transitioning to play with the boys is never going to win.
Oh, yeah, but they'll try. What was that other one? The one trans swimmer that beat Leah Thomas in that fluke of a swim where she didn't even try or whatever, was a trans woman transitioning to be male to go on the male team, which rarely happens, I also want to point out. It's so interesting. There's a fight to be
it's
had for the future generations.
And look, and it's a winnable fight too. I mean, when you look at what happened in Virginia with the parents that banded together for CRT, I mean, they drew a line in the sand. The Freedom Convoy truckers, things can be won if you fight hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
And and it's important. Even if you go down swinging, it's still better to go down doing the right thing than to just let things happen.
But that's how they scare you.
Than live on my knees.
Right. And that's why Tim Pool's right when he says, like, well, you know, people tweeted the picture of the second place girl and there's like, this is the true winner. And he's like, no, she's not. Because this is the reality we've created through our acquiescence.
Yeah.
And so I'm sorry, but this is when, and we need to face that reality, because if we don't, it's just we're going to get further and further. You know, they're going to keep winning. The people who are pushing this radical gender ideology are going to keep winning until we say, no. Yep. And we've said no, and now we have a winner who is not a female.
And that is not to stomp on your right to do whatever it is you want to do with your body right. as a grown adult. It's just to say that you don't get to infringe on other people's rights. And this is something where classic liberals and conservatives agree. It's totally fine to be who you want to be, but don't infringe on other people's rights. And you've done that here. Yeah. And that's where it is.
You don't get a play.
Yeah.
You don't get a... They need to make like a trans league or something.
But even then, you'd have a bunch of people who have differing advantages because you'd have females who have estrogen and males who have testosterone.
I don't know.
Divided by chromosomes.
Yeah, you just need to have men and women. If you transition to be a woman, sure, you still play with the men. If you transition to be a man, you still play with the girls.
And maybe just recognize it as a sacrifice that you made for living in the identity that you want. It's well worth it for me to live in the identity that I want, but I don't get to play sports on the team that I want to play on. That seems like a fair trade-off. You don't get to play sports, but you get to live in the body that you want to live in for the rest of your life, which points to me, like when I hear Leah Thomas speak in interviews about how I'm going to keep going and blah, blah, blah. It seems to me that your motivation here is really not for identity and affirmation and holding up a marginalized group. It seems to me that you made a calculated decision here to go from a failing athlete to a non-failing athlete.
Nefarious.
Very nefarious. Anyways, let's move on to some economic stuff before we get into word sneak. Here is the headline out of Wall Street Journal. Homes earned more for owners than their jobs last year. Now, that might sound a little confusing for people, but basically what this means is the increase in value of the typical U.S. home exceeded the median worker income for the first time, says Zillow. So essentially, if you've owned a home, that home value rose 19.6% in 2021 to $321,634 on average. And that's an increase of roughly $52,700 from 2020. And that figure, that $52,000, is higher than the median U.S. full-time worker average, which is $50,000.
Yeah, our economy is screwed. That's the way to look at this.
That's crazy to hear.
You don't spend too much time on this.
No, you don't.
Just if you don't have a home, you should look about buying a home. Because inflation only gets worse.
Yeah.
You know,
I can't
buying
imagine.
An upcoming market, you know, that's really what to
yeah,
say.
Yeah. Go to Tennessee, Idaho, Florida, Texas, try to get a home.
Those are already pretty peaked.
I know.
Well,
I know.
Florida is for sure.
But it's only going to go up.
So expensive already.
It's only going to go up though.
But don't move to Idaho. Because that's where I'm going.
Because that's where I'm going, so stay away.
You can't take my home.
Yeah, no, that's crazy, and it's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
And we're not regulating these businesses who are just like buying up houses and renting them out to people. They don't want you to have an American dream anymore. And you know what? It's getting to the point where I think conservatives are going to have to be honest about selling people on an American dream.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, that's definitely true. You can't sell it if you don't have the tools to do it.
Yeah.
I wrote about that in my book. Yeah, it's very important.
You're no longer going to be able to use that old pull yourself up by the bootstraps adage and look at a Gen Z person and say that's what you're going to do and that the American dream is still alive. If the plausibility of you buying a house is no longer there and to get a higher education, which a lot of people need for their careers, is setting you in just like insurmountable debt. Yeah, there's a conversation that's going to need to be had.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've been having those conversations. It's definitely true. But also, you know, young people don't go and be lazy.
No, don't.
Excuse for being lazy. And if you want to make something of your life, you still definitely can right now. You know, Amla dropped out of school. I dropped out of school.
Mm-hmm.
You can do amazing things. Some of the best people in the world don't do some of the, usually the best people in the world actually don't do the things that people are supposed to do.
Right.
And there's obviously still opportunity. For
of course.
Yeah. But for the average person, you know, it's not there anymore. It's just not.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it with just the economic implications of what our society runs on these days.
Yeah. You're not going to be able to ignore that line between that poverty line anymore. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. Yeah.
But no excuses to be a lazy person.
Yeah. Oh, of course not.
And, yeah, if you give up on the idea that, or if you don't demand from society, to demand that we live in a society where people can make a way for themselves, then what's the alternative? It's getting your pod and your bugs and being given, the people are going to offer you that. And it's going to sound attractive when it's like, oh, houses are so expensive, blah, blah, blah. You know, so no, make no mistake. Yes, the deck is stacked against you. Things have gotten worse. It's gotten much harder to make your own way, get a home, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But That's not a reason to turn to nihilism or communism. That's not a reason to, so
what's the difference?
Yeah. And so the values that America was built on, that just because we've strayed so far from that now we're in a situation where everything's screwed up, the economy screwed up and the American dream of buying a home seems out of reach for a generation. You're a critical generation because you can either turn on that, and just be like, well, I guess, I'll just take my bug sandwich and live in the pod that the government assigns to me and get my social credit score and try to keep that. And then at least my needs will be taken care of. Yes. That's what they want. And you can't let them win. And you have to. And so, maybe it'll be tough for you to get a home in your lifetime. But even if it is, it's the same thing conversation as before. Do the right thing. Hold forth the right values. Yep. Pursue them and demand and champion them and demand that we usher in a society that goes back to those roots that were what we were built on in the first place. And maybe we need changes. Maybe we need to safeguard it better. Maybe we need to change our perspective about some things and have better regulations or whatever. But you don't turn to nihilism and don't take the easy way out, which is communism that's being offered to you.
Exactly. The reason that we can talk about an American dream is because there is one in there, or there was one, whichever way you view it. And if there was one, that means that it can be reinvigorated and that you should be the person to do that. If you've made that acknowledgement, do what you will with that knowledge. But I think there's a fight. And if something did exist, that means it can exist again. So make it exist and call out the people who are stopping that from existing for you, because they know that's what they're doing. They're well aware of it. On that hopeful note, that motivational note, guys, we're going to move on to our final segment for Fun Friday. And then we're going to wrap up by talking about the future of the show, because a lot of you had some questions and concerns. We know Monday is the last episode of Will and Amala Live, but there is more updates. So stick around for that. Okay. So Will, Taylor, and I have four pieces of paper here with our names on it. Very and they fancy. All have words on them. We need to sneak these words into conversation.
Wait,
I'm going to pull up.
What do you mean?
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
You did yours over the course of the show?
Yeah.
Well, now you got to do
it
again.
I thought that was the point.
No, it's
that
a game.
Was totally
that's why I kept shaking my head at you.
I thought you were shaking your head because you're like, oh,
you blew it, Will.
Is getting it.
Should he take mine? Or I guess
he'll
know mine. Whatever.
That
just
is totally not the
we
point.
Don't know,
you're going to have to do it again.
Amala and I don't know your words, so you just got to sneak them in one at a time.
We do not know your words.
So pick them back up in order.
In order?
Yep.
He flung them around.
Wow. Wait, so how are you?
I love how he snuck in a bunch of words that no one noticed.
That's
except
hilarious.
Scott. I mean, I guess you kind of won in that
sense.
That's
what I'm saying. That's why I'm the best at this.
Yeah.
You did pretty much win in that
you,
sense.
Can you explain word sneak?
Yes, word sneak. We all have four words in our hands. We're going to go through, and I believe it's going to start with Will, right? I can't see the slides.
Yes.
So it's going to start with Will and his first word. You guys can see it on the screen. We cannot. And we are going to try to sneak them into.
I know. That's part of the problem.
I don't know. Can you tell me?
Okay, am I doing this?
Is it Will, Taylor, me, or Will, me, Taylor? Which way does it go?
It's Will, you, Taylor.
Okay. All goodness right. gracious.
Yeah. This comes with the territory of doing a live show, guys.
It does.
You know, sometimes it's not all.
So we all have our words here.
This is why
here.
We're not doing the show anymore.
And we'll get there. We might have to, we'll see how well this goes. If it doesn't go well, we will just talk about the ending of the show and explain that to you guys.
No, it's going to go great. To do.
Well, okay, you've got your first word. You're supposed to sneak it into conversation. You can start the conversation however you'd like.
Hello.
Okay, hi. I hope he has the right first word that
too.
The audience is seeing. Right. Scott's going to check that for
him. Yeah, we'll just show it to Scott real quick.
Put them in order. Scott's going to put them in order.
Okay, that's the
perfect.
One. Great.
Gosh, Will. Oh, you'll put them in order? Okay,
yeah,
thank you,
order,
Scott.
But you know the word.
Okay, right. Perfect.
Word. Okay, okay.
So, what's up, Will?
How's it going?
Things are good. You know, had a good nachos today. And
okay.
Oh, yeah, we went to this restaurant up the street. It's really good food.
Right.
Fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was... you guys know that guy, Joe?
Joe who? Rogan?
Rogan,
no, Joe
yeah. He's
no, not
guy.
Joe Rogan. Joe works here. He was helping me with my laptop yesterday. I fixed my charger, and he didn't do it very well. It's kind of sloppy Joe.
I wonder what the word was.
Damn it.
That's really good.
All right.
Oh my gosh. Right. It's kind of like slow. I don't know.
So the word was
know.
Charger, right?
Yeah, the word was charger.
The word is
yeah, yeah. The word was.
I said sloppy Joe earlier on the show and no one noticed. I thought that's
how
you play the game.
Oh my gosh. It's like Will always catches on to these things like really slow. He's like, I don't know, like you call him a dunce, a laggard. I don't know. It's like Will always takes a little while to catch on to things and to get into them. Like, I don't know what it is.
Dunce.
No.
Laggard.
Laggard.
Yeah, I know.
That's interesting. Oh, I got to do mine. Okay. Well, last night I went to my... This music is really loud. I don't know if it's too loud in the chat, you guys let us know. But yeah, last night I went to, you know, St. Patrick's Day. So I went to my favorite little local watering hole.
Oh, nice.
If you will. Yeah.
Nice.
And they have these great nachos there. They're brisket nachos.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, they're good, but I sometimes order them without the brisket and I get the ground beef instead because the brisket's kind of chewy. It's like sinewy. It's like, you know, just a little bit
sinewy?
Chewy. Too chewy for me.
The sinewy, so a word I, that you I normally... The,
yeah, I mean, what?
Is that your word?
Is it a word you use?
No, not typically.
Well, do you use sinewy?
I'm that was my word. That was your word?
So oh, did Will's I not?
Sorry, I didn't change it.
Okay, well, it's Will's turn. Right, you're going to have to change it again.
Sorry, guys. Sinewy was my word. I forgot to change the next one.
Do this one.
You have no, to do we this can't one? Skip because we have to skip through all the words. You have to do this word.
Too many words.
Is he on the right slide, Scott? Taylor?
Yes.
Okay,
we're
perfect.
On the same page.
Okay,
just
perfect. Great.
Okay. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Really happy
Hi,
to be doing? Here and doing this
Will.
Conversation with
yeah,
people.
Yeah, it's great.
And, you know, every once in a while you have a skiddly dupe, but every other day, you know, you sometimes have a washing machine that sometimes gets your clothes all clean.
I love it when that happens.
You work on the spindle of it.
You're speaking so low. Can you speak a little louder?
I can speak a little louder. You work on the spindle.
Was spindle the word? I feel like spindle was the word. Well, am I right?
I haven't finished yet.
Okay.
I haven't even said
finish.
My word yet.
Keep. Okay. If you haven't said the word, keep going.
Spindle was a good like throw off word.
Yes,
that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be creative. You know?
Yeah. Well, you're doing
a
great job.
You know, a little bit crazy and extra sensory. You know, kind of like a warp panel or an auger or some sort of magical device. You know.
Wow, I don't.
Smooth.
Auger.
Smooth.
That's my guess.
Yeah, it's definitely auger.
Amazing. You know, guys, sometimes I come into this office.
It's stupid.
I come into this office and I'm like, it is unbelievably cold in here. It's so ridiculous. I'm walking around. I'm like, where's my blanket? I need it. I need to put it on. It feels like the Arctic in here. I feel like a polar bear is going to walk right past me and I don't know what to do about it. You know, I'm constantly freezing. I'm chilled. I have goosebumps everywhere. I feel like my hands are turning blue, like I have Raynaud's syndrome or something like that. Like I should be some sort of Eskimo living in an igloo and eating fat from whales and seals. Like it's so freezing in here that I don't know what to do about it, and somebody needs to come in and fix the air conditioning. Maybe we need a new IT person, a tech person to come along, hire a new administrative assistant, something like a Pam Beasley walking through this office to fix everything up. That's what I feel. What'd you say?
What'd you say into the microphone, Will?
That was it?
It was igloo.
That's
Dang
right.
it! God, that was really good.
Yeah, I mean, that was a very convincing process. Yeah.
Thank you.
No,
thank you.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, Taylor's turn.
All right.
You gotta switch it, Taylor.
Oh, I did. Oh, no, I didn't. Just kidding. I looked, but I didn't. All right, so do you guys like horses?
Love horses.
Depart?
I don't really like horses that much.
Why?
They're just... You know, I had a bad experience when I was young. My parents' friends owned a horse, and we're in Oklahoma. Everyone has horses. You know, they have a ranch. And we went over there, and I had, you know, bright blonde hair, and the horse tried to like chomp at my hair, and must have thought it was hay or something. But anyways, plus they're kind of like, then you know, also in Oklahoma, you like for kids' birthday parties, you like go out to a ranch, and you're all riding along, and they're kind of stinky, they're smelly, they're putrid. You go to like an equestrian center, you get on the horse, and you're on the horse, and it's just stinky and smelly and putrid and
equestrian,
putrid.
Were either of us correct?
Amala nailed it.
So I threw Will off with my...
Yeah, you did.
I was in your shots.
So you did.
Okay.
I didn't even hear a question.
Okay, Will's turn. We got to flip to the next one.
All right, here we go.
Is this the right word?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, dude, your fingers are all over it.
But you can see this. Yo, Scott, this is the right word?
Can you see my word?
Yeah.
The
first
letter. That's it.
Okay.
Taylor's from New Orleans.
Not really.
Okay. Taylor's from New Orleans.
6 years in Louisiana. Baton Rouge. I've been in New Orleans.
Okay.
I know about New Orleans.
And you know about Mardi Gras, and you have a celebration, and you have all the trinkets and all the stuff all over you. You know, the green and purple.
Mm-hmm.
And you're having a good time.
Beats. Why are you whispering to this?
I'm not whispering. I'm talking.
Okay.
Maybe you should listen.
tell me more, Will.
All right. And you're in New Orleans and you're celebrating Mardi Gras and you have a crawfish boil and you're enjoying a little bit of jambalaya and food. It's really tasty.
Yeah.
And you're just enjoying yourself.
Gumbo,
you
know? HFA.
Gumbo, HFA, and, you know, a little Boudin French
balls.
Cuisine.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, maybe you'll take a... I forget my word.
Oh my gosh.
All right.
Just say it at this point.
Potpourri.
What?
What does that have to do with anything?
I don't know, man. I was trying to figure out a whole cornucopia of things to say. I couldn't figure it out.
So it was cornucopia?
No, it was potpourri. All right.
That's amazing.
All right. Good. Very good.
So I've been going on Instagram a lot lately, and I keep getting, do you guys go on your explore pages and get just like weird stuff that you wouldn't normally watch given to you on your explore pages?
Taylor, no. Switch the page.
No, my bad. Mine's all buttoned up.
Yours all buttoned up?
Buttoned up.
What does that even mean?
Super clean.
Super clean.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly measured to you?
Yep.
Perfectly tailored to Taylor.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I go on my explore page and it's like weird. I get like pimple popping videos. I get makeup videos. Ew. I get weird videos of like random animals. I get videos of men building pools in Indonesia. It's really strange. It's like stuff that you would like watch at 3 a.m. when like you're just scrolling through your Instagram, just watching mindlessly random stuff. And it's just weird. So I see videos of like lions.
Indonesia.
And yeah, Indonesia. No, it's not the word. Indonesia is not the word, but thank you for the guess. But I like watch these videos and it's like different animals and monkeys and things like eating bananas and throwing their poop at people at the Cincinnati Zoo, or like tigers being given catnip, or
Cincinnati.
Iguanas going into the water and swimming and like eating fish and stuff.
Iguanas.
No.
It wasn't Cincinnati?
No.
Wait, what were the tigers eating?
Can you get to the word?
She got
what?
It.
Did yeah, you get
she's,
it?
She's I said, yeah, it. I said, the. What did you ask me?
What were the tigers eating?
The tigers were sniffing catnip. The iguanas are like swimming through the water, eating fish and stuff. I just get like random stuff on my on my
random.
Instagram.
Very random.
Do you have any guesses?
So catnip is the word.
Catnips.
She's good at this. It's smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, she's...
Well, if you take 2 hours to get to the word,
that was impressive.
It makes it hard to...
Oh, wait, that's not my word. Is that my word? Oh, I skipped it. Okay. All right. I got one. I thought it was my next word, so now I have to completely from scratch.
Okay.
It's like I'm back in geometry class, and the first time I've ever walked in, and the teacher starts teaching us about all the, you know, the Pythagorean theorem and all the different types of triangles. What are they, like, you know, equilateral, isosceles, what's the you know, there's then all the shapes, the rhombi, and you know,
equilateral.
Isosceles.
Yeah,
nailed it.
Dang. Okay,
nailed it.
So we're close. Okay, it's Will, then me, then Taylor's last right. one, I think.
Final yeah. one.
Okay, right, Will, final one. Really bring it in here.
All right. You know when you got your backpack and you bring it to work, and all your loose change and your jewelry is at the bottom, and you're finagling everything in there to try.
Oh,
to get
all
it
my
out.
Jewelry gets in the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm often finagling.
And you got all this rich jewelry, like Taylor. Mm-hmm. Then you know it's always there, and chain burning in the bottom, and your books on the American Renaissance and historical facts.
The Disney Renaissance.
And Disney Renaissance and all sorts of good things. You know what happens?
Renaissance. Dang.
Did you say that? No, yeah. Finagle.
Mm-hmm.
What? Oh my gosh, I said I'm often finagling things in the beginning. That was going to be my guess and I didn't use it. You know what? I see a lot of this stuff happening, like stuff that's happening in Canada, stuff that's happening in China, stuff that's happening in Australia. And a lot of times we talk about tyranny. It's like we're seeing these leaders just come up and be dictators and tyrants, sultans, czars. They are just constantly trying to take over people. It's like we're living in a Napoleonic age. Like we have these little men and little people with little minds who are just trying to take control over everything that people possess and believe. And no, it's not Napoleonic. But yeah, we're seeing tyrants. We're seeing men and women that just want to take control of everybody. That's,
did you say
you guys have any thoughts on? Yes.
Little women.
No.
Little men.
That'd
little
be good.
People?
No, it was Sultan.
Oh.
I didn't even hear you say that.
I didn't either.
She was smooth.
I was smooth, baby.
But that's an interesting direction to go. I would have totally just talked about Aladdin.
I know. I almost did, but then I was like, Sultan's going to stick out like a sore thumb in that discussion.
I mean, you throw a Raja in there, Iago.
With the Sultan. And,
yeah.
You know. That would have been like,
Well, either way, I guess it worked. Yeah. Well, still gotcha.
Oh, you did.
Still gotcha.
I never thought of Sultans of Swing.
Yeah, that's
Sultans of Swing. Never even heard of her. Never heard of her. Never met her. Taylor, is this your last one?
Yeah, it's my last one. Okay. All right. So. I watched Titanic recently. It's a good movie. Cool. You guys like boats? There's all kinds of boats, right? You know, there's like giant yachts,
little houseboats,
steamships,
in Amsterdam,
steamboats.
They have all those boats that are on.
I didn't take one, but you know how gondola. They have taxis that are boats?
What? Gondola?
Gondolas? Yeah, gondola.
Yeah, we did like the canal tour on the boats.
Oh wow,
yeah.
It's fancy.
It's cool. Uh-huh. Keep going.
They
Go
only
on.
Have all the boats.
Tell me more boats.
They anyways,
have, they also only have 2,500 boats.
In all of Amsterdam,
boat permits that you can have.
Are this your word or is this mine?
what are other types of boats, Taylor?
There's lots of types of boats, but I mean, my favorite kind is steamboats.
Okay,
it's I mean, I don't know.
What's your second favorite kind?
Well, my favorite kind is steamboats because of the because you know ships like the Titanic, they have like emissions, and you know there's other types of boats like you know motorboats, speedboats, tugboats. They're just all over the place. Rafts, lifeboats,
tugboat.
I mean, it's just in there.
I think I was going to say either emissions or tugboat because you paused after the tugboat like you were just waiting
know,
to
I
get that word
one.
In.
I forgot not to pause after that one. You got to throw it in the middle of four of them.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Oh,
anyways, we tried, guys.
We tried. Thank you guys for watching Word Sneak. Maybe next time we'll do it a little bit more streamlined and Will will remember to keep his words in order.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm impressed that you snuck them in through the actual show.
Every single one throughout the show.
So now,
that's actually more fun.
Yeah, you guys can go back and listen to the episode and try
to
find.
Go listen to this episode again. I'm sure that's what everyone's going
to
do.
Yeah, try to find where Will snuck in his four words.
I'm actually curious. I might do that.
I heard you say Sloppy Joe earlier, and I was like, that's a really weird thing
that's
to
really
say.
That's really random.
It's a really weird thing to say. Man. Anyways.
That was one of my words.
Yeah. Guys, you had a lot of questions regarding the show since it is ending. Monday is our last episode. Lots of questions, lots of concerns. A lot of you commented in the show yesterday saying, you know, oh, we need to start a group for all the people who participate in this live chat every day because we're going to lose each other. That is not happening by any means, guys. So the show, after it ends, is going to take a break, but a new show will be taking its place, and it will be a live show that we believe is going to happen at the same time every single day. So the live chat's not going anywhere. You should definitely still stay subscribed to this channel, even though there might be some changes to it. The name might change. We're still working things out, but there is going to be a live show that happens per PragerU at 2:30, 5:30 Eastern every single day that you guys can comment on, and you guys will still be there to talk to each other. Also, Taylor isn't fired.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah, well, as far as I know.
A lot of you guys were like, where's Taylor going to go? Taylor's going to be right here.
Still here,
so
still around.
About it.
You'll still see me.
And you will still see his face.
Yeah.
So, guys, don't worry about it. We do have a landing page that you can go to. And
I just posted it in the chat.
Perfect. You can put your email on that landing page, and you will get specific updates as to what Will and I are going to be doing and when our new content lines come out, because we have multiple shows, not just one, not just two, but more than that, that are coming out for you guys to watch and content for you to watch. And a lot of you are asking, you know, why is the show ending? It's ending because of those new content lines that we are coming out with for you guys to watch that just require a lot more work and a lot more preparation and a lot more outside production time and things like that. So that's going to be coming for you as well. Plus, you'll have a live show. So do not worry about losing this channel or losing the fun people that you get to talk to in the comments every single day.
And I'm still Anything alive.
Else? And Taylor's still alive, and he's not going packing in a cardboard box. So,
yeah.
It's good.
The little stick over my shoulder with the bandana on the end of it.
Exactly.
Boarding a train.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Los
Goodbye,
Angeles.
World.
You'd be welcome here. Yeah. You would be welcome here.
Be dodging the Amazon train looters.
Well, guys, we're going to be back on Monday for our final farewell show. Thank you guys so much for watching. We hope you have a fantastic weekend, and we will be back at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. Bye, guys.
See ya.